Doc Harrison saved the boy. The Admiral Ranch proudly claimed Big Finn and put him in the Bragg family plot out there. Having a notorious outlaw and the youngest criminal ever to be shot by a Wyoming lawman would help make the ranch a legend, so King Bragg retrieved the corpse. All that I got out of it was big trouble. Reggie Thimble led the parade.
What kind of sheriff have we got? Shoots boys. Why don't you quit, Pickens? Or pick on someone your own age?
There was a side of it no one was confessing to. Namely, a mess of people would have been delighted to see hanging Judge Earwig strung up and left to dangle for a week. Sammy Upward, who ran the Last Chance Saloon, wanted to have a near-hanging celebration and send the bill to Earwig, but I talked him out of it.
Cotton, there's a joke going around the saloons. What does it take to put Sheriff Pickens out of office? Two boys and a girl.
Hey, I just thought I'd let you know.
Well, that sure steamed me up. The boys were about to kill two people, and the girl blew away clay pigeons with a load of sand. But that didn't matter. The damage was done. And the town was fixing to make me hand in my badge. I sure didn't like shooting that boy, and I didn't like putting lead into Mickey, too. I kept chewing on it in my mind and didn't see anything else I could have done. I asked a few people, like George Waller, what else I could have done, but all I got was a shrug. Anything but shoot a boy is what they seemed to be telling me. Reggie Thimble had me right where he wanted me, in the crosshairs, and I knew he was going to talk it over with the other Pima County supervisors and start looking for a new sheriff. At least the other boy, Mickey, was showing signs of recovering, but his left arm would always be useless. The bullet had severed some muscle, so he'd not only be in jail, he'd be about half fit to do anything. It was a bad ending for a kid who came out on the orphan train, an outfit that tried to give abandoned children a better life. Rusty became my eyes and ears, since no one was talking to me. Rusty patrolled the town, stopped in at all the saloons, and visited with bankers and blacksmiths.
You're in a bad way, Cotton. They think they have a joke for a sheriff.
Ma used to say you make your own luck. Maybe I should make my own luck. If I got me a rematch with Miss Quick, have we some way of keeping her from blowing away pigeons with sand?
I'll think on it. We've either got to have her shoot some other rifle with real shells, or we've got to have a target that sand won't even dent.
Maybe I call a rematch with someone else calling the shots, so she doesn't use them cartridges of hers she's got loaded with sand.
I'd like to see her blast away with the sand and nothing happens. Make her crazy.
Maybe she'll marry me. My ma, she always says marry someone you can live with. I could spend the rest of my day side by side shooting with Miss Quick.
Can you afford the powder and ball?
Nope. I can't afford her. But faint heart never won fair woman. That's what they say.
10 cans! Shoot at 10 cans! And only ones with a hole in them can.
I've been thinking, Rusty. That sand doesn't carry far. It's no good beyond 50 feet, so I'll challenge her to a match at 50 yards. Clay birds at 150 feet.
Sand or no sand, she's a dandy shot, Cotton.
We'll see. I started with Reggie Thimble, since he was the supervisor most interested in axing me. I found him closeted in the outhouse behind the courthouse. Reggie, that you in there?
What do you want?
I want to preserve the honor of Pima County. I'm going to challenge that little lady to a shoot meet. Clay birds with rifles at 150 feet. There was nothing but silence in there, so I left him to his business. There's nothing more important in life than tending to one's business. It beats everything, including women. If I could get through my entire life without one day of constipation, I'd count it a life well lived. But I could tell that Reggie was having a bad time of it. I headed for George Waller, over in his store. The mayor should be informed. Hey, George, don't fire me just yet. I'ma challenge the little lady to a real match, not some close-up shooting. Clay birds at 150 feet with rifles.
I hope you lose. We don't need an excuse to fire you anymore, but it would help matters along.
I tried Turk at his livery barn next.
You should challenge her to a critter contest. Whoever don't get killed by a critter wins a prize.
Not a bad idea, Turk. Pretty quick, I let word out all over Doubtful. I was going to take on Miss Amanda Quick and maybe show her a thing or two. I hated to think what would happen if I lost. But my mom, she always said, take one thing at a time. So I did. I headed out to the showgrounds beyond Saloon Row and found Billy Bones easy enough. Hey, Billy, I've told all the good folks in town I'm ready for a rematch. And what's more, I'll make it tougher. Clay pigeons with rifles at 50 yards. We're all raring to go.
You told them that, did you?
You bet. If that little shooter of yours can't beat the sheriff this time, why ain't nobody gonna show up for the next show?
Any rematch has to be exactly like the one before.
Oh, scared of some real shooting, is she?
I'll ask her, but she'll say no, Sheriff.
That's fine. That puts Puma County back on the map. Bones, he just stared. I headed for town, but Bones caught up with me.
Wait. I'll work something out with her.
Nah, Billy. We'll do the match this afternoon at the start of the show, or you might as well pack up and go. He sure didn't like that. The upshot was, I was at the showgrounds promptly at 2, and there sure were a mess of people come out to see it, and Bones was looking mighty bleak.
She'd be pleased to match you at 50 feet, Pickens. Otherwise, she'll retire from the contest.
You just tell this here crowd that I'm shooting alone. And it's at 150. Rusty was just so pleased he could hardly stand it. Bones, he gave in and started the show.
Ladies and gents, we'll begin this afternoon performance with a special exhibition of marksmanship by your sheriff, Cotton Pickens. The sheriff, assisted by his deputy, will attempt the impossible. Shooting clay pigeons out of the sky at 150 feet with a rifle. My good friends in Doubtful, Wyoming, I welcome Sheriff Pickens.
Well, I took my bows, and Rusty set up the spring-loaded trap, and away we went. Sad to say, I missed the first one, and that started some hooting. There wasn't a large crowd on hand. Most of the cowboys were hard at work on the ranches, but plenty of folks had heard about the rematch and were studying me. The second bird sailed high, and I led it slightly, squeezed, blew it to bits. I saw Miss Quick eyeing me from her wagon, but mostly staying out of sight. Well, fine. I'd show her a thing or two. I knocked the next bird right out of the sky and nicked the next one. It counted as a hit. I was doing what I do best, boring in on the target, swinging along with it, and then firing at just the right moment. I was born to it. Of the 10 birds, I missed one more and knocked 8 to smithereens. That sure pleased the crowd, but not Bones, and I suspected he'd pull up stakes the next day. His star shooter was sulking in her wagon, and everyone noticed. I saw Reggie Thimble staring at me. His plans to shove me out the door had suddenly gone awry, and he was looking sour. He should have stayed in his outhouse and read the Monkey Ward catalog in there. Bones began the rest of the show with cowboys roping calves, riding broncs and bulls, and all the rest. Then Miss Quick came out to do her sharpshooting stuff, but she wasn't all flouncy and perky this time. She looked a little down at the mouth. I watched, real interested, and was quick to note she didn't do any rifle stuff at all. Just trick shots from horseback and blowing holes through the ace of spades with a revolver, stuff like that. It sure was an admission that she was no match for me with a rifle. And the crowd caught it, too. Still, she was one fine shot and a dandy performer, and anyone who knew anything about shooting had to admire her. After she was done, I headed her way as she and her Batman were picking up all her stuff, and I lifted my old sweat-stained hat off my head. That sure was pretty shooting, Miss Quick. Makes a man think of marriage. She eyed me, the strangest look on her face.
Oh, Sheriff, you're a card.
Miss Quick walked off without a look over her shoulder. Well, that sort of bothered me some. I was real earnest about it, but she just dismissed me in a wink of an eye. Cotton, you've done it again. George Waller caught me early in the morning.
That little punk stole 3 licorice sticks. You owe me 3 cents. You were rusty. I shook the brat until his teeth rattled, but it won't do any good. That orphan train, all it did was haul the punks out of the cities and spread them around here.
You talking about Riley?
Who else?
Has he done this before?
How am I supposed to know? I got a store to tend and customers to look after, and I can't be studying every little rug rat that comes sneaking in to swipe something.
What'd you say to him?
I told him he was no good, he'd never be good, and he'd spend his life behind prison walls. Yeah, he started crying. I told him he wasn't man enough to take his medicine.
How long ago was this?
Yesterday afternoon. I know a rotten little crook when I see one.
You ever swap anything when you were a boy, George?
Not ever. I grew up straight and true, and well-bred.
Well, I dipped my fingers into the cookie jars a few times. Got caught, too, and got my knuckles wrapped. I mean wrapped with a ruler. It didn't do any good. Here's a nickel for the licorice. I'll talk to Riley and also to Rusty and Bell. Maybe we can do something.
It won't do a bit of good. Bad blood, it's gonna show in that boy. And you got him in your sheriff's office. I don't know how you ever got in, Pickens. You got all the town's half-wits in there.
I'd heard all that before. Bad blood, bad breeding, all of that. I sure didn't have any good blood or good breeding, but I wasn't sure what that stuff was. Mostly, it was people who looked down their noses at everyone else. I left word for Rusty that I was going to take the day off and take Riley fishing. I supposed that would steam up everyone. But Rusty wouldn't need me. He'd cover the Wild West grounds in the afternoon and deal with any trouble there. Those rodeo cowboys and all sometimes got a little unruly, especially in the saloons after the show. I collected the boy. He was at Bell's getting some lessons. I found Bell teaching him arithmetic. They were doing addition. I never could figure it out myself, but I got good enough to add things up. But I always had trouble with 8 and 7. It seemed like 13 to me, not 15. Bell eyed me standing there, but finished up her lesson.
I thought I'd take Riley fishing, Bell.
But he needs school.
Well, I'm taking some time off.
There's something here I am being kept out of.
For a few hours, maybe.
It's a man's world, all right. Well, take him.
Fishing? There's fish around here?
There's a couple of holes in the creek, and maybe there's something in them.
There's not a fish closer than 50 miles from here.
Maybe you're right. Belle just stared at me. She always knew when something was up. I had some line and fish hooks. We'd have to hunt for worms or bugs or grubs for bait and cut some sticks for fishing poles. Maybe we'd catch something. I didn't much care one way or the other.
What kind of fish?
Maybe some whoppers, boy. Big as liars can make them.
We're really going to fish? I've never been fishing.
You sure are a pain in the butt, Pickens.
That was as tough as she ever got with me. She made a sour face when I kidnapped the kid. It was a fine August day. Too dry, but that was August in Wyoming for you. We headed for the creek and then walked its banks upstream. It was slow and lazy in August. It got cold and swift in the spring, carrying off snowmelt from the Medicine Bow Mountains. In Doubtful, there were a lot of outhouses along its banks, so if a feller wanted to fish, he'd be well advised to head upstream. We got to the big swimming hole away upstream. A lot of stuff happened there that I carefully didn't look into very hard. Most of it happened at night. But now, on a sleepy, sunny morning, it was empty. The mountains in the distance looked somber and tired. Let's try here. Maybe there's some monsters in there.
You mean real fish?
I cut off some willow branches with my knife and sliced off the little shoots until I had a couple of long sticks for fishing poles.
Scrape around for bait, Riley. Bugs or worms?
He had a talent for that. And by the time I'd gotten the lines and hooks all tied to the poles, he had a mess of caterpillars, a few beetles, and some bugs I had no notion of. I made a couple of little floats from sticks and tied them in so the baited hook wouldn't just drop to the bottom. And then we were set. Now let's sit here in the shade so the fish don't see us. I was talking like I knew something. Actually, I didn't know nothing. So we pitched the hooks in, each hook laden with some fish grub on it, and nothing much happened. The floats just drifted downstream until our lines checked them.
Why don't they bite?
Beats me, boy. Tell me how you like it around here.
Am I supposed to like it?
Well, there's a man, Rusty, who's spending some of his hard-earned salary as a deputy of mine, keeping you fed and clothed and all. And my landlady, Belle, who's trying to give you a good start on life.
Fish ain't biting.
You remember your ma?
I don't want to remember her.
Miss her?
What is this? How come we're doing this? You taking me fishing or is this something else?
We're doing a lot of things here, Riley.
This is because Waller caught me. He pretty near twisted my ear off until I bit him.
That's one of the things, yes.
I knew it. My ass is in trouble, so give me the lecture.
Well, I could if you want it, but lectures don't do much good. If you want to dip into George Waller's licorice jar, you'll keep right on, no matter what I say or Rusty says.
You got that right, Copper. You're going to tell me I'm not a deputy anymore? Deputy's got to obey all the laws and all that, so you're kicking me out. Is that it?
Well, you got me there, boy. I was thinking along those lines.
Well, ship me off to somewhere else. I don't measure up.
Riley was staring straight ahead, and I knew he would land on anything I said. We'll fish, boy. You're still my deputy sheriff. You still get to wear the badge. You just keep that badge shiny for me. Make it shine.
You mean don't steal?
Oh, let me put it this way. Give more than you take.
I don't get it.
Well, here's an example. You could go to George Waller, who owns that store, and you could say, "Sir, I'll sweep your floor for you. If you show me where the sawdust and the push broom are, I'd do it for you."
You're just trying to turn me into a slave. That's what all the orphans end up as. They get us off the orphan train, and they got a slave.
No, Riley, not a slave. Just someone who gives back.
I don't feel like giving back. For what?
I was tempted to say for the food and shelter and clothes and attention he got, but I didn't. Children had a right to those things, whether or not they gave anything back. A child needs those things, no matter who or what he is. For me, it's being a man. I get my pay in a brown envelope once a month, and I try to give the county and town some safety. If I took the money and didn't give the people around here some safety, I wouldn't feel very good. Riley was watching the stick float bob a little in the creek. Someone worked real hard to harvest the plants that give that candy its flavor, and then other people worked hard to cut sugar cane or harvest beets for the sugar. And someone made the sticks in the jar, and someone transported the licorice sticks to here, and George Waller hoped to sell them for more than he paid so he could make something too, putting them in front of the public. So a lot of folks did work that paid them back, and the licorice sticks got to here, and everyone put some labor and skill into it and took some pay out of it.
Yeah, and now they don't get paid.
No, they got paid, all except George Waller.
I'm gonna resign as deputy. I'll give you my badge when we get back. I'm tired of fishing.
Riley's bobber dipped. Then it began making a circle. I think you got a fish, Riley.
Yeah? What'd I do?
We haven't got a net, so we'll need to draw it in slow and then beach it over there where we can reach into the water. The boy suddenly came alive. He tugged and pulled and worked the fish to the shore, and we saw its silvery body thrash as he drew it close. But then it spit out the hook, or maybe Riley tugged too hard, and it was gone.
Got away. That's me for you. We haven't got anything.
We just sat there for a while. There was some sort of big hollow ache in him, an ache no one could ever banish. We know there's a big lunker in there, and you're gonna catch it. I'll get us a proper rod with a reel and a net, and you'll catch it.
How am I gonna pay for that?
It'll be something I'll give you. But if you'd like to earn it, I think I can find a few people who pay you to sweep their stores. Well, I was expecting trouble while that Wild West was in doubtful, and I told the barkeeps to call me fast when it broke out. You can't hardly expect a cowboy show without a string of fistfights or even shootouts. Cowboys are a little unruly, and that's the way they want it. So the barkeeps, like Sammy Upward, kept a sawed-off shotgun under the bar, and that usually did the job. But after the show, when Doubtful was settling down for the short summer's night, I got a holler from Denver Sally. She sent her bouncer, McGinnis, over for me. She has a real good bouncer, and usually he can grab someone by the ear and throw him out if he starts abusing her girls, or he's too drunk, or he's getting into trouble. Once McGinnis even stopped an arsonist who was going to burn the place down and fry the girls.
We got trouble, Sheriff.
What kind of trouble?
We got a girl in the room with two people, and there's a mess of shots getting fired in there, and some screaming. Them walls are flimsy and don't hold lead, and no one's got nerve enough to bust in and stop it all.
Well, that sure didn't sound good. I strapped on my gun belt and hurried over there to Denver Sally's with McGinnis, whose short legs work twice as hard as mine. Who's in there?
Lily, the French bombshell. That's Sally's highest-priced girl, and two from the show. A big lunker named Rinky Dink, and that shooter, Amanda Quick.
The sharpshooter? In there?
That's who. They came together, rented Lily, and now all hell's broke loose.
Well, what's Miss Quick doing in there?
Don't ask me and I won't tell you.
I gotta know.
Well, when I was checking through the peephole, the three of them was having a fine old time.
My idea of Amanda Quick was changing fast, but I'd wait and see about this. People sure had strange ideas of what they want from life. Who's Rinky Dink?
Mostly a roustabout, all muscle and no brain. He puts up tents, does grunt work, stuff like that. He's been at Sally's every night after the show's done and stays the night.
Is he in the show?
Well, they're all in the show. That stagecoach scene, wild engines chasing the coach, he's driving it, or sometimes he's painted up and wearing a breechcloth or something and firing blanks at the stagecoach.
When we got to Denver Sally's, I found all her gals huddled in the parlor, except for Lily, who was caught in the back with Amanda Quick and Rinky Dink. Sally rushed up to me in her robe. She'd been busy with the trade herself until the trouble started. Just then, the girls all clutched one another and a couple were crying. Sally's had two floors, but all this was unfolding straight down the main hall. Sally, what's the story?
They're torturing Lily. They shoot. She screams.
You're talking about the show people, Rinky Dink and Miss Quick? What are they doing in there?
Oh, it's their idea of a threesome, I guess. Only it's all bullets and whips and pain. If they mark Lily, I'll mark both of them in a way they won't forget.
I was feeling real dumb, so I fessed up. You mean they're doing stuff that hurts?
Cotton, you are a child in some ways.
You let them do that?
As long as they pay and don't get rough. But this is rough. They'll likely kill Lily. You gotta stop it.
So I had to stop it and not catch lead sailing through that flimsy door. All right, you keep clear. I clumped real hard down that hallway. This is the sheriff. Open up with your hands up.
Go to hell!
The bullet busted through the door and smacked the hall wall. Miss Quick, you put that shooter down.
Which one? His or mine?
You come out of there or I'll come in there and it won't be peaceful.
Just try it.
Every shot sure jolted me some. She couldn't finish a sentence without a bullet for a period. Truth to tell, I didn't know how to stop this. I could hear a crowd gathering in the dark outside. Miss Quick, you send the girl Lily out the door now.
We paid for her and we're not done with her.
What are you doing to her?
Ah, Sheriff, you're such a coward.
All right, send out the guy, Rinky Dink.
He's just getting heated up and ready to roar.
You send him out the door. I could smell burnt powder in the hallway. All right, Miss Quick, if you won't come out, then nothing's going in. No food, no water, not a thing until you call it quits.
Call it quits? We're just getting ready for a hoedown.
Sheriff, you just bust your bum butt out.
Rinky Dink, you come out of there now. You hurt, Lily?
Help me! They'll kill me!
Ow! That did it. I got opposite the door, which was badly splintered now, reared up, smacked it with my shoulder. It caved in and I fell into the room, staggered, and got a glimpse of things before Rinky Dink threw the kerosene lamp out the window. The three didn't have a stitch on between them. Miss Quick wore nothing but a gun belt, and she sure looked cute in it. Made me think of proposing, but she was also waving her revolver at me, and I decided not to propose. There was just enough light so I could see Lily dive onto the bed, followed by Rinky Dink. But Miss Quick just waved her revolver at me.
So, join the party.
It wasn't a bad idea, but my ma always used to say, finish what you started, so I decided on that. You two from the show, you get yourselves dressed and out, because if you don't, I'll haul your bare butts to my jail, and you can sit in there and think about things.
Oh, you're a turd, Pickens.
But she grabbed her stuff and began to get dressed. By then, the dollies down the hall were all creeping toward Lily's room. Rinky Dink stuffed his shirt into his pants, yanked his boots on, and pushed through the crowd. Miss Quick was sure looking grumpy, like she'd been deprived of a cookie. She got into her fringed buckskins and pushed her way out and vanished into the night. I wondered how many times she had pulled her trigger that evening.
Don't come back!
Lily was a trooper. She was not only smiling, but enjoying all the fuss her pals were making.
Man, did he have a gun?
I managed to hold back the crowd that was swarming in, but Sally saw her chance.
We'll be open in 5 minutes. Half price. Even Lily the French bombshell.
Half price for the next hour.
There are people who know how to take advantage of events and turn everything into cash. And she topped the list. All those gents, they were digging into their britches to see if they could come up with a dollar instead of two.
We should stage one of these every night. I could retire.
It was the strangest thing. All I could think of was Amanda Quick wearing nothing but a smile and a gun belt. I thought I'd like to put her in a little cottage with rambling roses, and we could shoot at tin cans on fence posts for our entertainment when we weren't heating up the bedroom. I like guns, and I like women who like guns, and there aren't very many of those. I like to compare women to guns. Now, Amanda Quick, she was like a fine Navy Colt. Other women, they're like a blunderbuss. A few are like derringers. Belle reminds me of a dragoon, big and hearty and makes a lot of noise. The ones to watch out for, though, remind me of a dueling pistol. A big caliber, smooth, and mean. I've never met a shotgun, but I'd like to. About then, Billy Bones showed up.
Trouble?
Nothing to it.
She does that, you know. She likes little parties of three.
I'm hoping you'll leave town. We've had enough trouble around here.
Thanks, Sheriff. You're really welcoming.
It's her. She's trouble. I don't know a thing about women.
She's our big draw. Without her, we'd not have enough gate to pay our freight.
You're lucky she's not sitting in the jail bare-ass naked along with that stud of hers.
That's no luck at all. I wish she was there. We'd have a sell-out crowd tomorrow.
I might be a slow learner, but I was beginning to understand road shows and show business. Those people sure were strange. I headed back to the jail. I was sleeping in cell number 2 because I'd given my boarding house room to the Siamese twins. No sooner did I lie down on that hard bunk, mostly just sheet iron with a pad on it, than someone was tapping at the door. It wasn't real loud, just persistent. I grabbed my shooter and decided not to light a lamp. I'd open the door a little and see who was there without being seen. I saw herself, Quick, standing there alone. The moonlight caught her locks and caught the smile on her face.
Mind if I come in, Sheriff?
Well, I mind. Unless you got something to report. It's late and I'm ready for sleep. She ignored me and drifted in. And I thought I'd let her talk a minute and then push her out. I lit a lamp. She studied the office with its gun racks, my desk, the open door to the jail, and the darkness beyond the wavering yellow light of the lamp.
Mm-mm, I sure like guns. You got guns in every wall, and they just make me happy. Put me in the middle of a lot of big, long guns, and I'm a happy woman.
Well, I like guns too, ma'am. I got a mess of them, and I'm always a sucker for the next one. But I like the older ones better than the new. I like them when the shine's gone, the bluing is worn off, and I know what way off-center the shot'll go.
Sounds like you're talking about me, Cotton Pickens. I thought maybe you'd like to pull my trigger.
Ma'am, I'm not a big game hunter. I'm a meat hunter. I go out hunting, I want to put elk steaks or antelope on the table, for myself and family and friends. I never was one to shoot an elk because of its big rack, or shoot an elephant just to say I did, or kill a Bengal tiger so I could have a taxidermist mount the head with all those feline teeth bared. She studied me for a moment, and I was expecting some smart reply, but instead she turned real soft there in the dim lamplight.
I like you, Cotton Pickens. You know what the trouble is with road shows and show people? We're all lonely. We're not making friends. We're always alone as people get. No homes, no neighborhoods, just ourselves all bottled up. I've a favor to ask you. Could you sit beside me somewhere and just hold me? That's all. Just hold me gently.
I could do that, ma'am, but all I got is the bench in the cell there.
Then we'll make the cell our alpine meadow, full of sunshine and breezes.
We walked back there in the dark and sat down, and she surrendered herself to my arm. And we sat like that almost forever. She didn't kiss me. She didn't mess around. She just cozied up, and I felt her relax. She held my hand. Peace overtook her, and it was the thing she needed more than anything in the world. So I sat with her, even while my arm ached, and along about dawn, she straightened up, smiled, and whispered two words that meant something to me.
Thank you.
She straightened her doe-skin skirt, touched my stubbled cheek once, and walked away. She would return to her world, and I to mine, and we would remember a few hours when we were with each other in another world. Maybe some other time or place, or on some other planet, we might have found each other, but not in this world. I slept some, and was awakened when Rusty wandered in looking like hell. Bad night? Riley trouble?
The twins are fighting. There they are, locked to each other for life, sharing bodies, and they're fighting. It tears me to pieces. They're miserable.
Still about marriage?
Anna's insisting they go back to the carnival and earn money. No one's taking care of them here. I keep them in food, and that's about it. There's nothing for them. But Natasha's just as determined to marry me since I proposed to her, and she won't go back. And the whole thing's at a stalemate.
And the territory won't let you marry both. It's a problem.
Oh, there's no solution. It'll just get worse. It's tragedy.
There's common law marriage. Just marry Natasha and live with Anna and call her your wife.
Cotton, you're a card. You don't know women.
Where have I heard that before? Let's go talk to Hanging Judge Earwig. He owes us a favor.
He'll find some way to make it worse. I'll end up shipping him back to the Ukraine.
But he came along with me. We angled across the courthouse square on a fine August morning and found Earwig on a couch in his chambers.
But officer, I swear she told me she was overage.
It's you. Well, not much business this morning. Have you something to put in my charity jar or not?
Well, if you would do two weddings, you'd get double the donation.
More Ukrainian crises?
I think you already know the trouble. We were wondering if you have any ideas.
Well, you sure got a doozy, my boy. Two poor women locked together for all their days, each with a different dream, a different will. And one wants to be a bride. The other wants to put herself and sister on display again. And as miserable as that sounds, it's a life and an income, am I right?
You're right, sir.
Have you tried proposing to both?
Oh, this isn't Utah, sir. No one will let me marry them both.
Rusty Irons, you go propose to Anna and tell her you'll find a way to marry both twins at once. And come back and report to me whether she accepts. Desperate problems require desperate remedies. I have one in mind that should satisfy the law, satisfy moralists, satisfy religionists, and make all your lives happy.
All that?
I thought to hang one, and you can marry the other.
Rusty, he just looked peeved, but I winked at the judge. And then Rusty and me, we went to Bell's boarding house to have a go with the Ukrainians.
But how's he gonna do that?
Beats me. You want me to sit in on the proposal, or should I go visit the outhouse?
You sit in on her. Maybe you should propose to Anna, and we'll make everyone happy.
Yeah, that's a little too intimate for comfort, Rusty. No, the twins are yours alone. At Bell's, we clumped up the stairs, knocked, and found Natasha and Anna glaring at each other as usual. Natasha didn't even seem happy to see Rusty. The dilemma had exhausted any goodwill anyone possessed. Rusty, he got right down on one knee and took Anna's hand.
My dear Anna, will you marry me now and forever?
What's this? You are a madman.
No, my dear. I am a man overflowing with the love of both of you in my bosom.
I thought Rusty was laying it on thick. Natasha, she was studying him like he was a toad. Her biggest joy in life had been Rusty's proposal, which hadn't extended to Anna. But now Rusty was robbing her of all her prestige and turning this into a three-way deal.
I don't know if I want you. Natasha can have you. No, I don't think so.
My dear Anna, Judge Earwig says he'll find a way to marry us. Please change your mind.
My only pleasure in life has been to frustrate you and Natasha and your cruel plans to wed without me. Now you are robbing me of my sole pleasure in this miserable existence.
Oh, well, I'll take that for a yes. Congratulations, Anna. You've accepted. Now, wash up and we'll see what Hanging Judge Earwood can do for us.
The twins stared at him and at each other and rose. Anna poured water from the pitcher into the wash basin and took a washcloth and washed Natasha's face. And then Natasha washed Anna's face. And then they combed each other's hair and straightened their dress. First Natasha smiled, and then Anna.
Take us!
I took Natasha's arm, and Rusty took Anna's. And we helped the twins down the creaking stairs and made our slow, majestic way to the courthouse as the midday sun smiled warmly on us. People stared and smiled, and a brat boy tried to look under the twins' skirt, but I snarled at him. He thumbed his nose at me and skittered away. Somehow, Riley got wind of it and caught up with us, walking next to Rusty. We made our slow and stately way up the courthouse stairs to Judge Earwig's courtroom and found no one in it. That was either because I kept law and order so well that there were no cases before him, or I kept law and order so poorly that I brought no cases to him. I never could figure out which. But Earwig had a good job, in which he only rarely had to work. He emerged at once from his chambers, eyed us, and retreated. When he returned, he was wearing his black robe and carrying some marigolds, which he divided and gave to each bride. Natasha looked at them and at him, and began oozing tears. Rusty, he was kicking himself for not stopping to get some flowers beforehand.
I take it this is the bridal party?
It is, sir.
And you wish me to wed both of these lovelies to you, Mr. Irons?
I do, Your Honor.
I've been meditating on this, and I have found a solution.
He seemed uncommonly pleased with himself. The courtroom was starting to fill up. Word had buzzed around doubtful, and not a few citizens wanted to see the show.
Now I welcome you all to this joyous occasion. I shall be marrying Natasha and Anna to Mr. Rusty Irons. And I'll be doing it with all legality, morality, and propriety, for once.
I saw Delphinium Sanders, the town's certified prude, whispering heatedly at the rear of the room. Judge Earwig saw her, too.
We shall have silence here among those who have come to share this joyous moment. Now then. Unusual circumstances require unusual remedies. These lovely ladies are bonded by nature for life, and each desires in their most secret bosom to share her life with her husband, which poses difficulties with the law of the land. Given the nature of this matter, I concluded that each couple will have to divide its time with the other couple. That is to say, each couple can be married only half the time, instead of all the time. It is unavoidable, given that each bride is attached all her life to the other bride. Therefore, if it suits my petitioners, now standing before me, I shall marry Rusty Irons to Natasha on odd months of the year, and to Anna on even months of the year.
The audience listened, mesmerized.
Since Natasha will marry Rusty during January, March, and May, there is no need for her to divorce Rusty during the intervening months of February and April. Each marriage is for half a year only, alternating months.
What about February? Short month.
Ah, my dear, we live in an imperfect world, and the fact is you will have slightly less time with your husband. But bear in mind that you alone will enjoy leap years. You'll have leap year Februarys with your beloved, and Natasha won't. Is that fair enough?
Duh.
It went fast, and the crowd watched, some with pursed lips. Riley was the first to kiss his mom's. Billy Bones told me his Wild West would pull out the next morning. That was a good sign. It wouldn't be sneaking out at night, leaving debts unpaid around doubtful. That meant I wouldn't have to yank Rusty from his honeymoon and put him to work. The Wild West had drawn good crowds off the ranches. The drovers liked that rodeo stuff, and the town liked the shooting exhibits and western stuff.
There'll be a farewell party at the Last Chance Saloon after the show, Sheriff. Come join us.
Well, that sounded fine to me. The Last Chance and its barkeep, Sammy Upward, was my favorite saloon. It was big and generous with its drinks, and Sammy kept good order with a billy club and sawed-off shotgun. It sure was a pleasant August evening. The crickets were chirping and bugs committing suicide in the kerosene lamps, and the town dogs were peeing on every post. Bones had told me he did fairly well for a small town like Doubtful, and he was leaving a few bucks ahead. Some places, he said, he was lucky to get out with the show intact. The outfit was heading for Casper next, and he was worried because Casper had the reputation of being the roughest town in Wyoming, full of rural hooligans. Not that the show couldn't defend itself. Bones had some roustabouts who were really soldiers, ready to spring into action any time. Rinky Dink was one of those. Well, It was a dandy show. Word got out that this would be the last performance, so all the town came out to the grounds to enjoy the sights. There was no grandstand seating. People just came and stood or threw a blanket on the ground and sat. Belle was there with Riley. She was caring for Riley while Rusty was making whoopee with his Siamese twins. By the end of the show, light was fading, and they did their grand march just in time, finishing up at dusk. People had a fine old time, and then they drifted into Doubtful full of inspiration. That final drum and bugle parade was just right. I watched Bones' crew dismantle things, and they did it so fast I could hardly believe that for a few days they had conducted a big Wild West show there. In the morning, they'd hitch up their teams and ride away. It sure gave me a good feeling. I drifted over to Sammy Upward's saloon, and it was already filling up. There were a mess of cowboys from the Admiral Ranch, and I spotted Big Nose George and Spittin' Sam, belly to the bar, sipping the first red eye of the evening. There were boys from all the ranches in there, sucking beer, laying out coin for a shot of rye, or a glass of sarsaparilla if they weren't the drinking sort. Plug Parsons and Carter Bell were in from the T-Bar, along with Rudy Beaver. That outfit was far out, and they'd come a piece to see the show and rub shoulders with the crowd. Those cowboys were slicked up, in high-heeled boots and bandanas, and some had even washed up for the occasion. But there wasn't a sidearm among them, and I liked that, because sometimes one of them got a little frisky and began perforating the ceiling. But this here was a social occasion, wall-to-wall smiles, and that would make for a fine evening. The Wild West boys began drifting in, looked around, and settled on a corner table. They were mostly drinking rye whiskey. Maybe that was the preferred booze for the outfit. They were a muscular bunch. Cowboys were mostly thin and wiry and short. These show people were muscled up. Cowboys mostly sat on a horse. These show people were wrestling teams and tents and furniture and livestock all the time, and were all bruisers. The cowboys were more colorful, all spangled up in bright colors and gold and silver, while the roustabouts were wearing brown breeches, old boots, and tight-knit shirts. I saw Rinky Dink among them and wondered what Miss Quick saw in him. Maybe it was none of my business, I thought. He was no bigger than the other roustabouts, but his shoulders were axe-handle wide, and he had hands the size of hams. Everyone was sure having a fine time, and Sammy Upward was dishing out the booze faster than I'd ever seen him, coining money as he went along. It got crowded in there, and Sammy lit a couple more kerosene lamps in the wagon wheel chandelier, so there was good light even in the far corners. The T-Bar boys and Admiral Ranch boys were old enemies, so they stayed at opposite sides of the place, and mostly sat there in the heat, looking dreamy. It sure was a fine August evening, even if the place needed a little more air. Amanda Quick and Billy Bones showed up, still in their show outfits, she in her fringed buckskins, he in a giant sombrero topping a black suit of clothes. They sure looked fine. I waved, and they both saluted me from across the room, and next I knew someone had lifted her to the bar, and she stood up on it and was lifting a glass with something green in it.
Here's to Doubtful Wyoming! And here's to Sheriff Cotton Pickens!
Smiley Thistlewaite emptied a beer mug over me. And then Rinky Dink beamed Smiley with a whiskey bottle. And then Plug Parsons kicked Big Nose George in the crotch. Then Sammy Upward yanked out his shotgun and fired at the ceiling. Mighty Howl rose up and swamped the Last Chance Saloon, and drinking was forgotten for the moment because everyone had some new entertainments to keep him busy. I thought that this could be an enjoyable evening, but I had a duty to maintain the peace and also preserve the Last Chance Saloon before it was torn to pieces. So I leapt over the bar looking for Sammy's billy club, grabbed it and climbed up on the bar planning to rap hard for attention. Well, my ma used to say that good intentions aren't enough. Miss Amanda Quick kneed me where it hurt, and I folded over. Spittin' Sam shoved me off the bar and into Sammy Upward's prone carcass. Big Nose George had knocked him cockeyed and he was nursing himself under the beer spouts. I heard wild laughter, hoots, hollers, and a rumble of anger in there, too, as all them rowdies began to get serious about the whole business. A bottle of booze landed on my head, but my hat softened the blow.
You all right?
You're an idiot.
You got any bright ideas?
Yeah, rest them all!
I'll give her a try.
I clambered up and dodged the tumbler that shattered on the back bar.
Stop! You're all under arrest!
A beer bottle conked me on the forehead. That hurt.
I'm ruined.
This place is about to burn. One spilled lamp and it's all over. Smiley leaned over the bar and puked on my boot. By then, things were beyond human restraint. I heard the shatter of glass, the thump of fist on flesh, the snap of glass underfoot, the whoosh of air exploding from a gust, and shadows danced on the walls as the chandeliers careened this way and that. There was less laughter now and more rage. Something busted the mirror of the back bar, and shards of glass landed on Sammy and me.
You want the revolver? Shoot out the light!
And burn down the town? I'ma haul the bodies out. I edged around the bar, worked my way outside, saw that Amanda Quick and Billy Bones had escaped, and saw a crowd collecting there.
We'll haul out the bodies!
A reveler came flying through the door, dripping red. He had been rolling around in shattered glass. He sat on some horse manure, laughing. I edged in and dodged a flying chair, spotted a bloody cowboy who was being stepped on, got him by the ankles, and dragged him out. He howled as he scraped over glass, but in a moment he was lying on the street, leaking blood.
Fix him!
I plunged back in. A beer mug hit me on the head, and I started after the roustabout, but thought better of it. I found another cowboy slumped against the wall out cold, his mouth pulverized and leaking blood. I lifted him up, dragged him by his belt, and dropped him next to the rest in the manure outside.
Hey, Sheriff, why don't you just let them kill each other?
Help me, Mr. Mayor. We got people getting killed in there.
I ducked a flying fist. This time it was Rinky Dink's ham hand, and got a hold of Spittin' Sam, who had been no match for the roustabouts, and lolled stupidly against the bar.
Come on, Sam.
I got an arm around him and was about to get him out, when someone shoved me from behind, and I tumbled into the glass, taking Sam with me. All that glass cut me up. I got up and hauled Sam outside. A bandaging crew was at work out there. The brawl was winding down, and it quit as suddenly as it started. Some were laughing, some were sobbing. Sammy Upward was surveying his saloon, or what was left of it. The townspeople outside suddenly got brave and helped me drag the casualties out to the clay road, stanch the blood, and line them all up like corpses. One roustabout sat there laughing. He was unharmed. The cowboys got the worst of it. Show people did hard work every day, cowboys only occasionally, and now it showed. There were twice as many cowboys on the injured list.
All right, I'm taking you all in.
But we're leaving at dawn.
After hanging Judge Earwig, has he say.
What are you charging them with?
Well, let's see. Disturbing the peace, assault and battery, destroying the saloon. I need to look that up. You name it, I'll include it.
Suppose I just donate $100 and you let them go.
I don't take gifts.
Just get them out of town, Pickens. Tell them to vamoose.
Nope, Mr. Mayor, I've got 12 roustabouts and 20 cowboys moaning and groaning around here, and they're going to stand before the judge.
I don't know how you ever got appointed.
You shouldn't have appointed me. Now help me move these galoots.
But the jail was a long way off, and we'd have to drag about 20 of these wrecks.
I'll help you. I want my saloon paid for.
But it was Bones himself who came to the rescue with a 2-horse freight wagon. We piled in the bodies, moaning and groaning, and I took the first load over and locked them in cell one. Then we loaded up the wagon again and herded those who could walk, and we filled up cell two. By the middle of the night, I had over 30 revelers crammed into 2 cells, thanked Billy for the wagon, and told him I'd get the judge up early so the show could be on the road.
They ain't fit to travel, Sheriff, so there's no rush. You can treat me to breakfast.
Miss Quick eyed the sorry humanity in the cells.
Oof, makes me glad I'm not a man.
This was Hanging Judge Earwig's finest hour, and he knew it. He convened court at 6 in the morning, making sure that everyone was grouchy and no one had dosed himself with coffee yet. I marched the criminals into court, 33 in all, and they were a surly lot, stained brown from all that dried blood. They shed a lot of it, wrestling on the floor with all those broken bottles. Billy Bones came along with a bag of money. He was reconciled to what was coming and wanted to bail out of Doubtful as well as he could manage, which would mean forking over.
Earwig leaned at the assembled miscreants, cowboys off the ranches, roustabouts, and show cowboys from the Wild West.
What a beautiful morning, gentlemen. At least I think you're all gentlemen, aren't you? What a lovely sweet dawn welcoming a glorious day in Puma County. Do you wish to plead guilty to whatever charges we can think up? It'll save time. If not, well, I'll set the trial for 2 weeks hence, and you may post bail for $1,000 apiece or enjoy the hospitality of Sheriff Pickens. I understand the piss pots are overflowing and there's a lack of bunks, but you'll have no trouble accommodating yourselves to minor discomforts.
All those miscreants stared up at Earwig, not yet fathoming his opening sally, since half of them were still drunk and the rest were hurting or leaking liquids from every pore and orifice. Still, they listened.
There is the small matter of Mr. Upward's saloon, which is now suffering from the recent and memorable joust in which you participated. He has yet to give me an estimate, but he lost every bottle of spirits in his possession, most of his glassware, most of his furniture, sundry other items, and the Montgomery Ward catalog from his outhouse.
He peered owlishly at the silent and surly crowd of miscreants.
There are also the matters of disturbing the peace, assault to do great bodily harm, if not exterminate anyone in your way. There's public drunkenness. I believe there were threats and foul language. There was the matter of defying the sheriff, who ordered you to cease and desist. So how do you plead?
No one said a thing. So Earwig pointed at each man and asked him to plead, guilty or innocent. But they were all clamming up.
Very well. I will remand the prisoners to the sheriff and direct them to appear at their combined trial in a fortnight.
Your Honor, may I be heard?
Step forward, sir.
My name is Bones, Your Honor, Billy Bones. I am the employer of 12 of these gents, and I will enter a guilty plea for those in my company.
A guilty plea, is it?
If it can result in a fair settlement, Your Honor, guilty it will be.
I see. And what would a fair settlement be?
Let us say no more than 40% of the cost of rehabilitating Mr. Upward's business establishment, if you determined that my group was at fault. However, since they didn't initiate this difficulty, but sat peacefully until set upon by drovers, the true amount should be less, no more than 10%, because they were merely defending themselves.
Earwig leaned over and jabbed a finger at Rinky Dink.
You there, how did you defend yourself?
We were sitting peacefully at our table, Your Honor, when we were set upon by local rowdies. We remained seated until it was plain that we needed to protect our persons and guard our private parts against the unruly mob.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Now, how did you protect yourself against the drovers from the ranches, may I ask?
Well, sir, we invited them to join us for a drink, and we expressed our friendship and best wishes, for we had just competed in certain rodeo events in our show, and we offered to buy them a round of drinks, but they chose to hit us.
Hit you?
We did our best to keep the peace, sir, but it came time to defend ourselves, and so we did. It being a principle of justice that we have the right to defend our persons against harm. Your Honor, it was a matter of honor and decency. The star, the glory of our show is our shooter, Miss Quick. She came to have a friendly drink with all parties, being of a generous nature, but the locals began to abuse her, threaten her, mock her honor and skills, and needless to say, we were ready and willing to defend her against these calumnies, canards, and gross perversions of the truth.
That Rinky Dink sounded real practiced at this, I thought. Maybe he had some experience. I thought I'd ask Bones if this sort of departure was ordinary.
And so you defended her honor against the local drovers, who were demeaning her, is that it?
Yes, sir.
Tell me, what are calumnies? Tell me also about canards.
Those are real evils, sir, right out of Webster's.
And what truth was perverted by these drovers?
They said she couldn't shoot worth a damn. If she didn't load her rifle with sand, she couldn't hit the broadside of a barn.
Ah, now we're getting somewhere. And does she use sand?
Never, sir. She shoots nothing but lead, and anyone who says otherwise is a rotter, a can, and a bounder.
And those are from Webster's, too.
That's what Billy Bones taught me to say.
Your boss is a fine, upstanding gent. After all, a lady's virtue is at stake.
He turned to the rest of the miscreants, familiar faces from the assorted ranches around Doubtful.
It's always a joy to spot old friends and acquaintances. Now then, my curiosity's got the best of me. I shall point, and you shall tell me how many times you've been before this court. If you wish to repeat your name, that is fine. If not, it won't matter.
He pointed a crooked index finger at Big Nose George.
Tell me truly, sir, how many times have you stood before me in this court of law?
I believe it was 4, sir.
And you, fella?
5, sir.
He pointed at Alvin Ream from the Admiral Ranch.
And what about you?
I don't rightly remember, sir. So many times I can't quite say, but it's in the double digits.
More than the fingers on my hands.
Yep.
Several cowboys whistled. A little brag was good.
And you, Smiley Thistlethwaite?
Beyond counting, Your Honor. Simply taxes my mind to remember them all.
Well, Texas is a pretty big state. A true retrobate and proud of it. What about you, Spitting Sam?
I've never had the honor, sir, but only because I've dodged the law. But I've been before a dozen judges throughout the territory and have survived 20 or 30 good fights.
Good, good, good.
One by one, he had the locals fess up. And most of them put the best face possible on it and confessed to far more infractions than they had to their credit. I thought most of them had been before the judge once or twice at most, but this lot was confessing to 5 or 7 or a dozen arrests for brawling. There was something real satisfying about it, and it did my heart good to see so much manhood confessing to so much public disturbance and Doubtful. There was not a town in the territory that could match or beat Doubtful when it came to public disturbance. And I must say, those roustabouts with the show were really impressed. They hadn't the faintest idea until last evening what they were facing in Doubtful, Wyoming. But now they knew. Judge Earwig finished his questioning with a vast smile building under his rough beard. A gleam lit his eyes. I knew this would be a decision for the ages. I could see it coming, like a burst of sunshine in that courtroom.
Well now, we have a bunch of splendid confessions here. We've listened to more confessions this fine morning than I've ever heard in a single session of this court. We have confessions upon confessions, admissions upon admissions, crime upon crime duly noted and officially accounted for. When it comes to confessions, this is truly a manly crowd, except for the show people over there, who are swift to blame anyone other than themselves. They're a shameful crew. But the locals, who have paraded before this court dozens of times, they're as fine an example of Puma County manhood as ever came here.
I was getting antsy, seeing as how Earwig was going on and on. I was plumb wore out and wanted some shut-eye. But this was Earwig's moment of glory, with the sun and moon and stars all shining on him, and he wouldn't let go. Some of those fellas needed some medical attention, I thought. Or at least their pals needed to put them on a horse and carry them back to their ranches. But Earwig ignored that, or if he saw it, he thought there was divine justice in it.
The Wild West scoundrels are herewith fined $20 or 2 weeks in our iron cages. Their choice. If they choose to pay, they must leave town before sundown.
They sighed. Billy Bones would pay and extract the fines from their pay down the road. They settled morosely while Earwig grinned at them, enjoying every moment.
Now then, the locals, who confess to crimes beyond number, crimes exceeding the stars in heaven, must endure a harsher fate. I herewith sentence them all to hang by the neck until dead, 1 week from today.
That sort of stopped the show. That was it. Sentence imposed. The cowboys looked at one another amazed. I sure was gonna have a mess of hangings on my hand. And the only way I could do it was with a scaffold wide enough to drop them all at the same time. I'd get the carpenters busy on that. I'd have to order a mess of rope just to put nooses over the heads of 20 or so culprits. Big Nose George sat down on the floor and rubbed his eyes.
Stand up, you. You're in a court of law.
Big Nose slowly unfolded and stood erect.
Now then. It would impose a great hardship on our esteemed sheriff if he were to keep all 20-some of the condemned in his 2 cells, feeding them, changing diapers, hosing them down and all. Therefore, I am remanding you to your ranches for 1 week, provided you put $1 each in the charity jar, and you will report here 1 week hence for your choking party.
The mob stared, absorbing all that.
I'll be there, your lordship.
Smiley dropped the greenback into the charity jar and walked out. A certain amount of greenback exchanging went on,
And pretty soon, the jar was laden with bills, and the last of the culprits had staggered into the morning sun.
Now you may take your leave, providing the fine is paid.
Billy Bones sighed, dug into a black leather purse, spread out some greenery before his honor, and then marched his charges out the door into the glaring light of day.
It should be just enough to put Sammy back in business.
The hanging judge and I watched the culprit stream into the day and vanish. He was looking self-satisfied, and I could well understand it. Sammy Upward's famous saloon would be restored. The Wild West Joe would depart without taking a lot of Doubtful's cash with him. Your Honor, the county has a gallows stored away, but it won't drop 21 at a crack. You mind if I hang him in shifts?
Well, that hardly seems fair. Some fellas have the honor of croaking a few minutes before the next lot.
Well, I can have them draw straws to see who goes first. I can hang six at a time.
Well, you know, not all of them will show up. Then I'll have to issue warrants for their arrest. You'll have a stack of warrants in your office to use at will. It might be pretty handy for keeping the peace around Pima County.
I was beginning to see the genius in his sentencing. Well, that's pretty fine, Your Honor. Maybe we'll only hang a few in a week.
Well, set up the gallows and we'll see.
Well, that sounded fine to me. I'll get a crew busy. We'll get some fresh hemp. I never could tie those blasted nooses, but I know a few who can. I'll get Rusty to do it, if I can unloose him from his honeymoon.
Or honeymoons.